Hello and welcome back to the Let's Backflip Show Happy Hour. I'm Ryan Fring, co-creative director here at Backflip and self-titled Lord of the Podcast, bringing you those sweet, sweet vibes in the morning. Actually, I don't know. Is this morning? Is this evening? Could be any time. But thanks for downloading and listening to the podcast. This is episode 56, where we're hanging with our friend Shane Reinbold. And at the time, he was chief of staff and mission advancement for Immaculate Heart of Mary Catholic Church in Monona, Wisconsin. He's since moved on from there, but I think what we talk about and the lessons learned are still valuable in, you know, what is marketing, what is fundraising in the church, and what that looks like in reality and, you know, kind of the ideal. So it's a real great conversation with a great, young, energetic man. So tune in momentarily for that. If you haven't yet, please do all the things. You've heard that enough if you've listened to the podcast. And we appreciate you. So thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. And if you are just downloading this for the first time, we're also anywhere podcasts are sold. So check that out. We're on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon. I mean, just all the places you could want us, we're there. So check us out. Leave a review if you enjoyed it. Otherwise, let us know what we can do to improve. Would much appreciate that. Would greatly appreciate that. I don't know. I'm not going to edit this. That's how it's going. So this is episode 56 of the Let's Backflip Show Happy Hour, Marketing, Ministry, and More with Shane Reinbold. Let's do the thing. Hello and welcome back to another Happy Hour. I am Ryan Fring, Creative Director here at Backflip. And that was the first time I actually ever played a video intro through Restream, which is pretty cool. And it just automatically goes back to video. So I'm glad I was ready for that. So today, as you saw in that title, we're talking to our friend, my friend. There's no other people here. John's not here. He's a little stuffy today, so he didn't want to put us all through that. But we're talking with my friend, a guy I work with, guy I've known for a few years now, about ministry, marketing, and more. It's kind of like Bed Bath & Beyond. I hope you're really excited about that more part. So without further ado,
wow.
Welcome, wow. Mr. Shane Reinbold.
I appreciate it. You know, I've never been compared in any sentence to Bed Bath & Beyond, but I think I'm honored.
Yeah, no, this is fantastic because
the more part. Let's get right to the more part.
Huh? I'm so excited about this more part with you. Yeah. You were asking earlier, what are we going to talk about? I was like, well, here's some general areas, but
we'll see
where we go, right?
I love it. No, it's so good to be here. Thank you for having me. I when I first got the note of like, hey, do you want to be a guest on the show? My first response back was like, oh, like a guest in the room while watching someone else on the show? So I'm flattered to be here as a guest. So
that's
thank you
great.
For having me.
Also, I like that idea of, you know, you just being a part of the audience. Like, we just invite people to be in the audience. Like, you could just sit here in my basement.
I'm in. Bring me back next time.
That'd be so great. All right. So this is a happy hour. And everyone at home, including yourself, is always encouraged to drink. But we just want you to bring something fun, never pressured. So what did you bring today? Did you bring something?
Here's the daily, guys. Well, I just brought black coffee.
Shame in black coffee.
Favorite Menards. No. I don't feel shame at all.
You should have shame. I mean, that there's no Bailey's in there, but you should have shame on that coffee cup.
I thought for sure
you'd be, you know, you'd have some kind of really great, you know, bespoke coffee cup.
I know, right? Well, for a minute there, I'm like, should I grab an IHM cup? And I'm like, no, this is what I drink up pretty much every day. Keep it consistent. Members only cup here if there's a membership at Menards, but,
More legit right there is what just happened.
Exactly, yes.
What was I going to say? Oh yeah. How much coffee do you drink in a day?
Okay. So that's actually a good question. I used to be totally on the coffee game all day pretty much, but, you know, good season of Lent. I've decided to cut back a little bit. So, I don't know if it's cutting back. I've started now where I drink espresso in the morning. And then my coffee throughout the day is limited. So I don't think I've limited my caffeine intake. It's just the constant sipping of coffee has dwindled for good reason.
Yeah. Kind of those small little steps that can help you maybe just not always having to sip something or
To be clear, just so everyone doesn't think I'm super sacrificial, I basically just switched to tea. So it's not like I've opted out of anything major. Yeah. Anyways.
I like that. You're like, I gave this up for Lent. But
totally. No, just
so we're clear, I didn't really do much. Like, not a whole lot at all.
Stay humble. I gotta stay humble.
Yeah. So today I've kind of got some normal stuff that I usually have. Got a little protein. I was gonna have something else. I was gonna maybe grab a little food or something, but then I was like, oh, it's Friday, it's Lent. I can't just grab like a meat snack or something.
Right, yeah. A meat snack. Tell me what a meat snack is.
I have these chicken snacks. So like we'll grill a bunch of chicken or bake it on like Sunday. And then across the week, I have little baggies and I could eat little chicken snacks, little meat snacks, which are really, really nice. Okay. So
meat snacks.
Yeah, so that's one of my drinks. That's my hydrating drink today.
Okay.
And then I've got this Terramana tequila, which is like my favorite tequila in the whole world.
Okay, sipping tequila. Good for you.
You can just drink it straight. Yeah,
that's like next level. There you go. I like that.
I like that comment. Good for you. Yeah. I'm gonna sit here and drink my coffee.
Good for you. I have my coffee and water, so it's like welcome to penitential season.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and get your intro now that we've done the happy hour part.
Yeah.
Who are you? What's your position? I looked up your position. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, right.
tell us more about that.
So I apologize. Every time I smile this big, my little earphone plugs up. So if I'm just doing this, I'm not listening to anyone. I'm holding it in my own ear. I don't have any voice back over here. No, that's a good question.
You're like, what? Go ahead. What are we saying?
What should I say for that?
Yeah.
My name is Shane Reinbold, and I work here at Immaculate Heart of Mary Parish. We are the Catholic Church in Monona, the fashionable east side of Madison. Yes, so I've been here now. I'm just wrapping up actually my fourth year here, which is awesome. I've done a number of different positions here at Immaculate Heart of Mary. I began here teaching and doing some things with high schoolers, which then kind of naturally, as it does, moved into more of a marketing job, I guess. So about 2 years ago, we made some pretty big adjustments in the terms of way we operate both as a church and school together as one parish, becoming really mission oriented in pretty much everything we do. So our day-to-day operations, big picture, fundraising, all of that, we have kind of joined forces, if you will, in-house, really. So I guess that was kind of the spearhead of what I started doing. And that ranges from all things from marketing things to fundraising events, to staff formation, to event planning, all of the things that fall under the umbrella of how are we advancing our mission? How are we coming together as one place, doing what we're called to do? So that comes with it a lot of fun responsibilities and fun jobs. So the job title is a funny thing because hopefully mission advancement kind of encompasses all of that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Before that, I worked for the Diocese of Madison. I still work for the Diocese of Madison formally. And then before that, after college, I worked at Camp Gray. I was a camp counselor, which was a fun part of the journey.
Hey, here we go. I can throw that up. Also on the website, it says chief of staff. You take care of the president.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Press secretary, chief of staff, you name it. No, those are just that staff formation part, any staff things that happen. We're not a huge parish. We're not a small parish. So along with that just comes the livelihood and benefits of all, having a really wonderful team of people. So, we can talk maybe more about that later as it comes up, but yeah, I like that part of the job. I work on a really, really great team of people. So any type of initiatives to enhance that team community, usually comes across what I do.
Yeah. And that's, I love to, you know, it's those simple things or those things that seem simple, like bringing this work together for the parish and the school and, you know, having one person lead it after it gets done, you're like, oh yeah, duh.
It's smarter. Like, yeah, exactly.
And there's obviously history and, you know, things might've been separate for certain reasons and then this happened and that, but then you get to a point and you're like, how do we do this better? And this is one of those ways, which is exciting. So we are live. So, and if you do ask questions or make comments, I can do this like with
Caroline, one of our a lesson top authenticity. Fans.
Yeah.
I hope that's, in regards to my admin love of Menards. maybe.
Yes.
Oh, yes, exactly. There we go. The coffee mug. Coffee mug. Carolyn. Yep. Yeah.
So that's great.
Very good.
Don't let my judgment of your coffee mug ever stop you from drinking.
No, it never has. It never will.
And then we got a little love over
east
here.
East side love. Father there we Andrew. Go. Yeah. You know, I don't often say we're the east side, though. That kind of came out casually. I have a lot of Monona pride. I love Monona. Mm. But the east side of Madison, I guess, you know? Mm-hmm.
You're like throwing us east siders under the like. I mean, we're Monona. It costs like 30% more here to buy a house.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, hear me out. I think I'm going to pull this little AirPod out and see how it works. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. Can you hear me okay still?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Sorry. It might be a little echoey for those of you at home. I just pretend I'm in some sort of large stadium and you've come.
That's great. No, this is, what's normally happening is something on my end breaks and then Carolyn will text me and be like, Ryan, we can't hear you. So a little bit of
every time you hold it, it gets a little funky. So I'm like, I'm going to take them out.
A little bit of echo from you is no problem at all. So we kind of got like what you're doing now and a little bit of, you know, what you did before. But how did you get into all this? You know, like, did you go to school? Can you go to school for this? You did mention Camp Gray before this, which I believe what you were doing there, at least at some point, was a very different skill set, but certainly applies. Completely. So how'd you get into ministry like this?
Yeah, I that's a good question because when I went to college, I can share where I'm from. I was going to use it in the game later, but I'm originally from North Dakota. I come from a very large family in North Dakota. And I came to La Crosse, Wisconsin for college and working for the church, working for a nonprofit even was nowhere on the radar. Marketing was nowhere on the radar. I began actually, looking more into education, especially education in the sciences, which is kind of laughable now looking back. But from there, I got a job for the summers working at a summer camp, which is also funny because I was never a summer camp kid. I was never, even interested in becoming a camp counselor, but it was there that I kind of honed in on new skills. I realized how important it was to be all in on a mission, all in on basically like living as best as we can and utilizing everything we have. And it's really where I learned that as like a young freshman in college at a summer camp. Hmm. That summer camp ultimately connected me to the Diocese of Madison. I obviously had a passion for my faith, had a passion for the Catholic Church. It really never did cross my mind about how can I do this as a career? How can I invest my life into this mission? But it was after I graduated college that I went on full-time at Camp Gray. From there, just led to some natural connections to make a formal move to the Diocese of Madison. And that's when it kind of became like, okay, this mission of the church is something that I can give my life to in a way that's not just what I do after work or what I do on the weekend, that this is something I can
grow. Right.
And so that has naturally led me to a parish, to Immaculate Heart of Mary. And it is funny because those summers that I worked as a camp counselor, the more and more I like tap into some of those honed in skills, it really is just this mentality of like putting our best efforts forward and tapping into skills and gifts that we didn't know we had, that we learned about ourselves and that we can practice and grow better in. So anyways, I when I first came here in the school, I didn't even come here with the intention of working in the school, but I first landed teaching some middle school classes, which, is a direct ticket to heaven, if I can say.
The kids loved you. And it's funny that you say that like you never went to camp or, you know, weren't like a camp person or didn't see yourself that way. Cause I've always thought your personality was like totally that, like you just have this engaging, you know, kind of electrifying personality where you just say, hey, and you're like smiley and, you know, it's like, oh yeah, let's talk. What's up? You know, like, and I feel like that's kind of like camp skills, camp it's, energy, you know?
Yeah. But it's like, you tell me to like, go climb a rock wall or bow and arrow, that kind of stuff. I'm like, nah, I got
the outdoorsy stuff.
I came to really appreciate it and love it though. But thanks for saying that. It really did.
yes, and then moving into the middle school classroom, I learned a lot more about myself. But really, throughout all of it, it was like this constant, what's the mission here? What are we striving towards? And it's so much bigger than just like, oh, here's our goal point. And that's kind of what I like drew the most inspiration from, that nothing I've ever done has been like, here's a deadline and a goal by this quarter or this financial goal. It's always been so much bigger than that, this mission. So ultimately, to know that I've landed in the spot where my role is mission advancement, it does kind of make sense now to get to where I am. So in all, pretty much all things I do, that's kind of in the background of my thought process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and that makes sense. And what you mentioned earlier too, you know, I love that. And it's maybe part of my story as well, where you do help out, you do volunteer, but, you know, you want to do more. And there's just such a great opportunity to do that as a job and so many different ways. And I think the opportunity is that there's just a lot of room to grow and ways to do it intelligently. Bring, you know, camp skills or business skills and bring that into the church and help really set up that foundation for success. You know, we like to talk about the foundation of like the church of like, you know, the foundation of Jesus, like have a foundation that is made of rock, but it's almost like we have 2 feet, you know, 1 foot kind of on that foundation and then 1 foot that's sometimes on quicksand because people don't know, you know, like volunteers don't know how to do business and don't know how to do fundraising, you know, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars is drastically different than, you know, moving the collection.
Yeah, there's like this kind of mentality that I go like, it's always a gift to have willing people, but it's another gift to have people who have their mind kind of what you were just expressing there.
It's particular skill sets too.
Totally. The beautiful part about a church specifically is that it requires all skill sets. You know, like if you're working, for example, in an architecture firm, or if you're working in a real estate company, you're kind of honed in on like, these are the skill sets we look for. Sure, there's going to be different types of skill sets in an office, but in a church setting, I mean, if you think about everything that happens in the life of a parish, even per day, it requires a ton of different skill sets. And it requires a ton of people who are willing to show and share and grow in those skill sets. So it's an adventure, truly. It's fascinating.
Yeah, well, and absolutely kudos to, you know, people who step up and do things that they're not comfortable with. I like to think that Father Andrew here is giving us a face palm.
Oh, the East Side comment.
It's either the East Side comment or just criticizing skill sets, you know?
I think Father Andrew was born and raised on the East Side, but he pretends Monona, so I see what's happening there.
He pretends to be bougie like Monona. Again, I will mention we are live, so please do post your comments. I will throw them up, and you'll see them down below. We've got James Gregory Curran here. We knew you when. Is that family or?
He used to work here at another parish in Madison. So I'm maybe referencing I first met him when I worked at camp. So.
Oh, you nice. Know, yeah.
You know, that 19-year-old singing campfire songs.
I love that. Actually, our kids, for the first time this year, they were going to go last year. This year, they're actually going to Camp Gray. So we're super stoked about that. Cool. I did, now that we kind of got into it, I'm super curious, like, what is your faith story, you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll sum up in a nutshell. I grew up in a Catholic school system, actually, kindergarten all the way through high school. If anybody's familiar that's watching this with St. Ambrose, which they should, I watched both Carolyn and Angela's happy hours about St. Ambrose.
I
went to a school similar to St. Ambrose, pretty much kindergarten all the way through high school. It's become even more so similar to St. Ambrose, that kind of model of education. And then when I graduated high school, I did want to get away for a little bit. So I would say my faith was central to my life, but maybe not like the driving force of my life. Is maybe a nice way to put that. I went to college and it fell off the radar a little bit with it. It was less than a central part for a few years there. But I didn't anticipate talking about Camp Gray so much today, but it really was kind of that kind of kick in the pants to get it back central focused again. A lot of positive role models brought me back to it. But truly, sometimes I'm still, even to this day, when I go home, like, I can't believe I'm doing this in my life. I'm working for the church. Each day it grows more and more of that central importance. It's a great gift to be able to serve the church. It definitely has now become and solidified the central driving force in my life. It's not exempt from any challenges. I think sometimes people might look at, you work at the church. How lovely and peaceful and cheery and
Supposed
to have joy, but working for the church, like you said, there is a business component of it. There are challenges.
When somebody says that, you just go, "Oh, you've never worked for the church before."
And it's really interesting, truly, and this is something I think about a lot, because it really now has, in a really profound way, combined this like very personal central driving force of my life with my career. As beautiful it is to like intertwine them, it also is very important to not forget about one or the other. That like what used to be like this very deep passion of mine that like lived throughout my life is now the majority of my life. And so it's important to not let that personal side drop, which I think sometimes is a challenge for people who work in the church. For me to like work at a mass is very different than me going to mass and prayerfully entering in. So there's always kind of this dichotomy. Sometimes it's really beautiful, and sometimes it's like, okay, like, are you just doing work right now, or is this your personal life? So
right. There's even maybe more of a challenge because of that blurred line of, okay, well, I did some research because I'm, you know, if you're doing a little teaching in a class or something, like I did a little research on it and I led some prayer. Well, that doesn't really count as my prayer time for today, said, you're working at mass, right. You know, it's probably practical that you're like, okay, this is, you know, I'm doing a lot of work on Sunday. I also have to work this mass, but it's about the only time I can go to mass. So I also need to enter into mass in a full way, even though I'm also working,
right.
You know, and it's certainly similar, but different, as it were. With what I do, you know, video production, live technology, all this stuff. I love movie making. It's also a hobby, you know. It doesn't have the spiritual aspects, but that line is blurred of like, I come home and, you know, like, what do I want to do? You know, I still need to feed that creative, that creative muscle. And I get to do some of that at work. But it's interesting of like, I don't want to be in charge of a project. I want to, you know, because I direct over here.
Yeah.
And when I want to do the other stuff, I'm like, I don't want to be in charge. I don't want to have to, you know, coordinate 20 people. I want somebody else to coordinate, and I just want to come do one small piece of it, because I need to feed it in a different way, because my job is also my hobby, which I was kind of seeing as similar to what you're saying.
Yeah, that's a good connection. I don't know how your brain works, Ryan, but I have a rather segmented brain, and so, which is a gift for most of my life. But I like kind of, it's easy for me to distinguish like, oh, that is a work thing. Sometimes those lines get blurred. Where I'm like, my work thing became also my passion thing, and so I like the idea of like feeding that passion side of it while fulfilling the work side of it, vice versa. So yeah, that's really interesting. It's a
Well, and I think, you know, it doesn't help that we can also see kind of that other, you know, hobby or joy or personal thing in work. And that's what I strongly strive to do, especially when I'm working on a creative project. Like, okay, I'm getting out of the office. I'm going to tell everyone not to contact me. And, you know, I'm going to sit around for 4 hours and try to come up with an idea. And I'm going to watch YouTube, and I'm going to drink some alcohol, and I'm going to, you know, go climb a tree, and then I'm going to come back, and then I'm going to do this. And like, this is a blast. This is fun.
Completely.
It's also for work. So I also try to figure that out, because I want to love every day at work, even, you know, when I'm doing stuff that is not great. You know, it's kind of like that offer it up. Right. But instead of just, you know, having it suck and offering it up, being like, well, there's ways that we can transform that to make it not suck. So always thinking about, you know, how to make that a little bit more fun or a little bit more engaging.
Exactly. That's what it's about. Yeah. Well, and that's like, you know, when I, especially when I talk about my job, or especially with my family, who I would like to believe knows me ultimately the best, and I talk about my role now in what we call marketing, right? And I don't know if I have like a innate passion for marketing, or even like a skill set for marketing. I have no experience before this.
Great segue, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I think I'm going to take over the interview.
You're perfect.
This is how I describe it now, that like, I don't know if I could market anything other than what I'm passionate about. Mm. And I have great respect, and also a question of like, people who are marketing things that they're not passionate about. That would be a really great challenge for me. Right now, it's very easy for me to talk about the great things that we're doing, the great things that the church is doing, upcoming things, all of that. It's natural for me to talk about because I'm also interested in it. So marketing is something that I'm passionate about. And people who are watching or who are going to watch that are in marketing, like, of course, this is marketing 101. But it's something I learned when I was like, oh, I can't work in marketing. I have no experience with that. I'm like, okay, just be genuine. This, like, here, it's kind of authenticity. When I write things or make things, I often think like, okay, maybe selfish. Like, Shane, what would you like to read? What would you like this to look like to interest you at any stage in your life, when you were kind of a punk in college, when you were a teacher, when you were at high school, what your parents? I mean, I can make these connections so easily about marketing because something that I was raised with and passionate about my whole life. So I don't see like a career in marketing beyond this, because it would be really challenging for me to market something that I'm not invested in entirely. So
yeah. I can speak to that too. I do want to throw up some comments that we have here. You know, Father Andrew Showers, you totally honed in on it. It's about the East Side. And then he also says some kind words. Shane, you're talented man. Give to IHM.
Yeah.
Thank you for all you've done and continue to do. I echo that sentiment. And then we've got this from Carolyn. You know, she relates to the comment about marketing, what you're passionate about. She's doing that over at St.
Ambrose. Oh, I've learned a ton from Carolyn, sincerely.
Yeah. And let's see what else she said here. This is why I constantly talk about the Dead Eyes podcast. I think Carolyn gets paid the more people that listen to this Dead Eyes podcast. And I'm actually very interested in listening to this podcast. It's a podcast about an actor who was fired by Tom Hanks on Saving Private Ryan because Tom Hanks is like, he's got dead eyes, get him out of here. And like what that did to his career and stuff. So he's been interviewing stars, you know, actors and all this. And I think he's working up to interviewing Tom Hanks.
I love it. Okay. Well, she just gave another follower. I'll start this.
There you go. So she gets $5 for that. So back to the marketing comment.
Yeah.
It's interesting about marketing what you're passionate about. And I think it's why, you know, there's different roles, right? So there's a role you're in, there's a role Carolyn in, and it's like, you are the hype people, you are passionate about this thing, and you can market the heck out of it, right? You know, and those two things go hand in hand. And then there's kind of essentially the role that we're in, and we have to figure out how we can be passionate about something. You know, like we advertise a construction fan, right? So probably one of the most boring things, objects or ideas that we've ever advertised. However, our shtick or our whole kind of idea is like, let's make awesome. And that gets to that idea of passion. And I want to be passionate about everything that I work with, including construction fans. And so what we did is we took it and we're like, okay, why?
Right.
Why are we marketing this? What's the need? Okay, so there's a need. So let's understand the need. Now let's understand how we can do this in a way that can really connect with people.
Right.
And actually, I'll pull this up real quick so you can see. I don't know. Have you seen Red Beats Blue or Dry Max with a Vengeance? Have you seen either of those?
Funny, as I was making those comments, I kind of forgot who I was talking to. This is something that you face on the
Oh my gosh, yes.
I just watched a commercial, I think, for like exercise equipment you guys were doing. And there too, I was like, wow, they like, it's just like, you can feel that passion I also think it speaks just to you. Sorry that I'm interrupting you. It speaks to your ability.
This will give me a chance to find it.
Yes. It speaks to the ability of you and your team to like really get to know who it is you're working with, what they're passionate about, and you kind of feed off of that, of like making their passions come to life is probably a passion. And so I know that from experience working back with Backflip, but to be able to step into a situation maybe that you don't even are familiar with. I don't think you probably have a great understanding of construction fans before this. Right. But to get that, feel that passion from whoever it is that's bringing it to you. That's a skill.
Yeah. So let me pull this up. Thank you for allowing me to work on this while you said that. So I'm going to do this without audio too. So this is an example. We, kind of ripped off Dollar Shave Club. and they wanted to, they actually came to us and they said, hey, we want to do scientific testing. Our competitors did the scientific testing video. Their science is bad. We need to show them how they're wrong and et cetera, et cetera. So we took that. We thought about it for a little bit and then we're like, what if we just blow them out of the water? You know, like if there's somebody picking on you, you don't argue back,
right?
You know, like you just go above and beyond in such a way that it's not even an argument anymore, and you're just the leader of the pack. So,
right.
So we did this thing with the fans. This is our scientific testing, quote unquote, where we're doing ridiculous things, and that was Chuck Norris.
We've got
like a rodeo rapping contest. You know, just lots of fun, right. Silly things. So you take that, and you're like, well, I'm not passionate about these fans. However, I'm passionate about good marketing, and maybe that's where the tie-in comes.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
So how do we make this good marketing?
Right.
And this is one of those pieces. Let's see if I can pull up. Let's see. We got Drymax. So then we did a follow up to this because this video blew up for them.
Yes.
Drymax. There we go. So then we did Drymax with a vengeance. I think you can still see that, right?
Yes, I can. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is probably one of my favorite pieces we've done.
Oh, I love it. Oh, this is awesome already.
And it's the whole 80s, totally. Kind of 80s, 90s compilation of action movies that we got to do. And again, it's their new product, but it's just this, you know.
Oh, totally. Same spin on it. I love it.
Cinema story, yeah.
Yes.
Drymax with a vengeance.
Yeah, see, this is the creative side of it. Like, this is where I can see your personal passion bringing out the passion in something you probably didn't even have interest in before.
Right.
That's awesome.
Then this is, you know, this is probably why it's one of my favorite parts, because it goes from that kind of mustachey 80s to like a ninja film.
Yes, absolutely. And no one questions it. It just happens.
No, yeah, exactly. We got to work with parkour artists, martial artists, trainers and all this stuff.
Look at this.
Like, yeah. This is actually a buddy I went to high school with too.
And the main guy there?
The main character there.
Oh, so, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You should definitely check that out.
Yeah. Oh, I have to. That's awesome.
Yeah. So just that idea of being passionate. So since you segued so well, and thank you, Kevin, for the Chuck Norris comment. He invented, his jeans he invented to do martial arts in. That makes so much sense because, like, jeans are normally not that flexible.
Right.
Thank you for that comment. It's always amusing. Your marketing segue was really good because marketing for the church, I always felt like there's a lot of opportunity because a lot of it is just terrible because... and I don't want to criticize people who are trying their best, but you know, there's a lot of times where people don't know what they're doing and they're, you know, doing marketing for big campaigns, and it's just not great. And there's maybe some lost opportunity there.
Completely. Right? Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, out of total respect to a lot of people, I guess, if you will, in this industry. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. And we, you know, we always, we're hypercritical of it because we're the ones being marketed to as well.
Yeah.
But I know the people who are doing it and have done it, and I'm related to some of them. And so, like, I appreciate the work, but we can definitely do better.
Totally. Well, exactly. I mean, this, you know, I think you said it best by when you said, like, there's this whole avenue, and you used the word avenue, which I like. I mean, it, in the landscape of what we do as a parish, of what we do, even in the nonprofit world, if you're like really want to take a way step back, which to be clear, I understand we're way more than just another nonprofit, but I think there's this, like, there's a low bar of expectation. And I think we have set that for ourselves, which is both kind of upsetting, but also provides a really good opportunity. Mm-hmm. I have to joke. I mean, I think there is, I'm going to use the word like an outdated mindset. And by no means am I saying that I'm striving for relevancy, but I think there is, you know, the world of marketing has progressed so fast, and you know this better than anyone. I mean, it, the way that things are displayed, projected, advertised, if you will, moves constantly. For good reason, things in the church don't always move constantly. And I would say 98% of the time, that's a good thing. But when it comes to marketing, it kind of follows a very similar trajectory as I guess other things in the nonprofit world, but in the church world and parish world. And I think that especially in the mission of what we're trying to do, if our mission really is, well, the mission here at IHM is to go and make disciples of all nations. If that really is our mission, then how we actively pursue that mission, of course, if we just wanted to stay in our own house, in our own network, with our own people, we wouldn't have to do much for marketing. Right, we already have people in the door. We have kids in our school. We have people coming to our mass, to our events. But that's not our mission. Our mission is to go out, to stretch beyond. Right. In order to do that, there needs to be some sort of competency, some sort of relevancy in how we show that mission. Of course, the best way to market is simply by our own personal witness, and I will always believe that. But sometimes to get people to see our personal witness requires some creative marketing, some creative strategy on how to get them to see us, how to get them to be a part of this, to invite them in, to make them feel like they are invited into this. And that requires a level of being willing and able to come up with ways to best do that. So I think you nailed that there, because we kind of have this low bar. For good reason as well. I mean, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, what we do here was much more part of normal community life than it is now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, 50 years ago, this wasn't as countercultural as it has become. And so there's a challenge now that this isn't the status quo like it was 50 years ago. This isn't the familiarity of, oh, this is how we were raised. This is what we do. So not only are we trying to invite people into it, but we're also informing people of things like this. Mm-hmm. We're also sharing knowledge, sharing wisdom, truth, and then secondarily inviting them to be a part of that. So I think there, it comes with this kind of new avenue. You know, a term in the church that's often used is this new evangelization. And there's really, well, I just kind of introduced a new term there, because we have marketing and then we have evangelization, which—
Yeah, right.
Then, because they are two different things, but really the idea of evangelizing is to like invite others in, share them with the good news. But in order to do that, we do have to be creative in how we share this evangelism, how we get that out. And that requires some marketing. So sorry, this is kind of a jumbled answer to your question here, but it's easy to get stuck and like, well, this is what we did and it worked well. But you look at that, like that worked well in a culture that now longer today with all things in marketing,
right
the mindset of sometimes the church.
Well, and I'm we've got another comment here too, getting over the idea of people will just come,
right?
And it kind of gets to your idea of, like, you know, we're making this distinction in what is evangelization and what is marketing, and you know, there's the overlap, and in both areas, like one-on-one or a personal relationship, I can sell, you know, I can sell somebody on almost anything if I'm one-on-one with them, you know, just through enthusiasm. And certainly with the faith as well, you know, you get that and that transfers in, like Jesus wasn't putting up signs, you know,
right.
Aside from, you know, his one sign, right? He's not taking out ads in the local scrolls or whatever. He's walking by and he's like, yeah, he's like, hey, fishermen, you know,
come with me.
Yeah, let me teach you to be fishers of men.
Yeah.
Right. And so obviously that is so integral and so important. However, in the last 70 years, you know, globalization, right? Mm-hmm. We're so apart. We're having meetings over a computer, right?
Really?
We're not encountering people in the wild in the same way that we were, such that, you know, I invite people from the grocery store to come to Mass, you know, like I don't talk to anyone at the grocery store,
right.
Not even the checkout person. I'm just going to a robot. So we don't have that personal interaction anymore. And so it seems, you know, in the last 70, 60, 40, whatever years, that with that globalization, the let's see. So I just got a text to see if Carolyn was telling me to fix something.
Yeah, I know. I just did the same thing.
There's a need to kind of enhance, right?
Right.
Because the core is still the same. Like we put out ads so that somebody can come in and meet somebody, whether it's like at IHM, you or Father Chad or another parishioner. Like if they can just come in and connect with somebody, like that's going to be the most powerful marketer and evangelizer. However, when you're online, when, you know, somebody's looking up Catholic churches in East Madison, you know, you got to be able to have that personal event evangelical message, you know, so we're using marketing to kind of repackage that.
That's completely it. I mean, there has to be a level of intrigue. There has to be a level of, I want to know more. I want to check that out. There has to be some sort of, not even like a catchy hook, because I think sometimes that can, we're taking a really, really profound thing and moving it to a really human level, which sometimes there's a danger there. But I mean, I even think myself personally, when I am looking at an ad for anything, and like most people I would imagine at this point, it's very easy that if I'm not almost instantly interested, it's very easy just to move on, right? And so as superficial as it can be sometimes, I mean, there is a thought that we're like, we need to be really cognizant of who our audiences are and where we are marked to those audience, which I don't want to immediately segue to the website topic, but because I think there's more to be said here that, this is similar to what you talked about in your video of like, the competitor or the bad guy of like, if they're coming in here, we're just going to go above. We're just going to go above and beyond. And I think that kind of speaks to what we're marketing is going above what the culture is creating as the norm. And I think that creates this avenue where I'm excited. That's where the passion comes in. That's where this idea of mission advancement, the mission that we're advancing is not even... we're not even trying to clash with the culture at this point. I mean, the culture is going to push their mission. That is just not, that's why the term countercultural is so accurate, because we're not even clashing with the culture anymore. It's just like, no, what we're offering here is just, it's on a different plane. And that's where the evangelization comes in, but we need to market that event. We need to market what we are doing.
Right.
It's interesting because, you know, as especially this year, as everything has created way more easy virtually, there is still the resounding importance of that face-to-face, the interaction, and using marketing to ultimately lead to an interaction and not just live in a marketing world. Yes, we can talk about the website if you'd like, because I'm very excited about that. And I just
thought, that's great. Yeah. We got that comment that I threw up there.
Yes.
And I would even throw out there, you know, maybe it's more with Catholic parishes, but I see a lot of businesses that just have really terrible websites. But the reason that they can be around is because there's a good product, you know, and same thing with churches. Like there's such a good product that these crappy websites stay around forever. However, it's that idea of well, how many more can we reach? You know, how much more can we reach our mission with better tools, better, you know, and marketing being one of those tools, certainly.
I'll give maybe a kind of a cliche example here, but and also a subtle plug. As you know, as Ryan very personally knows, iGEM has a fantastic fish fry, right? Mm-hmm. I'm essentially at a point now where I spend very little time and or resources to market the fish fry, okay? I mean, very little. I create a Facebook group about 5 days before and put very little amount of money towards that fish fry. It is not hard at all to attract 850 plus people to that fish fry. Why? Because they know from personal experience that this is worth it. I'm going to that. I'm tracking it myself. So that is an example of, like, I don't need to invest a ton of time into creative marketing because they're going to love it. And by word of mouth, they're going to share it with other people. Now, translating that into larger parish mission of what we're doing here, of going to make disciples, how can we creatively bring, yes, the best form of marketing, right? Exactly. We just started at the last one. We're like, we're going to use, if we're getting 950 people to come through this line 4 times a year, we're going to introduce them slowly into why else they should be coming here many times a year. But it's that idea of, like, okay, how can we, if people are coming here at that rate, how else are they coming here? How else are they knowing of us? How else are they seeing of us? And when they do see it, when they do hear it, are they leaving either in thought or by actually coming here? Are they leaving with the mentality of, like, I want more of this, and I also want to tell more people about this? Because that's ultimately the goal. And of course, we live in a world now where a lot of those things come from social media and from websites, right? I myself, if I hear of a new restaurant opening up, if I hear of a new event coming up, I will immediately go look at their social media and their website and pretty much almost instantaneously make a judgment call. I'm like, oh yeah, this is worth it. This looks like I have something I'm interested in. And sometimes that's where we get stuck of, like, okay, then we need to make sure that that is not only representative of who we are, but what we do. And so, yes, unfortunately, yeah, like you said, if someone's product is very, very good, and they have a large group of people that's advertising for them, they don't need to have this updated, newest of the new, freshest website. Because it speaks for themselves. But if we're trying to bring in a new group of people that has no other connection, things like the website and social media are vital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and, you know, there's so many tools too. So Facebook is another kind of major primary place. Instagram, certainly, where you can share a lot of that information. But at some point, somebody's going to want more, right?
Right.
So with a new restaurant, I might not even see their website until I need a menu. And that's only if their menu's not in Facebook, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so there's tools like Facebook where you just get some good images and put your information in there. You don't need a great website. But, you know, to contact someone about a different type of booking or catering or things like that, you know, it's kind of like figuring out the right tools for the right job. And to bring it back to this website discussion, not making a website that is all things to all people, but really honing in and figuring out what's our top 5 things that we need to do and doing those 5 things really, really well. And we're going to hit 95, 98% of the need, and we're going to do it in a better way. You know? And so I know that's what we're doing right now with you guys, with the website, taking the two, making them one, and simplifying and paring down. And as long as I can get the lunch menu on that homepage, I'm good. That is the number one thing
absolutely
we use every other day in my household is the lunch menu.
Hold on. Before we jump to the website, I just saw over here, Father Andrew made a very good comment, this idea of community, that we're made for community, and the community person should become a part of the mark in a sense. I think oftentimes in the world of marketing, what I'm familiar with the world of marketing is that, like, how do we get this out to absolutely everybody, which is important at times. And some things is that reason, but I would also consider it marketing. If I have a really good conversation with a parishioner, or I welcome a new parishioner in a very particular way that makes them feel actually welcome and a part of it, that to me is also a great, beautiful sense of marketing, because I feel confident
person
is then going to. It's this idea of community, and that's the great gift of marketing the church, and that's why I feel pretty confident I couldn't work in marketing for another company or agency, because I can genuinely share this with someone because I'm a part of it, and they, I hope, in turn go and share because they're a part of it. And so yes, what Father Andrew said, I think is a really beautiful comment that we're all a part of this marketing. And so it's funny that, like, yeah, sure, I may spearhead some marketing things, but really everyone that works here is in marketing. Mm-hmm. From the school chef to the parish secretary to the guy that does the business paychecks. I mean, we're all in marketing here. We're all, because we're living it. We're all witnesses.
Right. Right. So, well, and you know, something important to keep in mind, and we're more aware of this because we do it, but, you know, maybe the general public is not. When we think of marketing, a lot of times we think of like Don Draper and like a billboard and sure. a Google ad and a commercial.
Right.
But those are just a few specific tools in the marketing tool chest, because right. again, this type of marketing, like that word of mouth, that one-on-one is the most powerful.
Completely.
And so we're always trying to replicate that and draw that out into these other forms. Like one of our largest clients actually came from a radio ad, and it was from us mm-hmm. screwing around like, hey, let's just do something ridiculous on the radio and put ourselves out there. And this person happened to be looking for a team to work with, and they heard that and they're like, I've never heard anything like this before. Yes. This sounds ridiculous. Yes. And so, you know, they came in for a meeting and then we met and that was it. So we're always trying to replicate that in-person experience because that is so powerful. And, you know, the big agencies think about, they have other terms like these activations and events and, you know, person to person marketing. Those are things that they sell and they work on. And that's just something that maybe we can take adequate pride in, like sharing in the passion, figurative and literal, sharing in the passion for the faith and the church is like the best form of marketing. And I think that's why we've gotten away with not having the other aspects of marketing be so well for many years, but now we're able to step it up and we need to.
Exactly. Yeah. But speaking more about this website, because this is kind of combined a couple of things I do. So yes, before this, Backflip actually created really beautiful websites. We had a website for the church and a website for the school, which, like you said, at the time made total sense. And with the way history was, that made total sense. But as we're moving to a way more, what I would consider a way more cohesive mission, vision and mission, if you will, a lot of these words are kind of interchangeable. If we are truly one parish that has a church, that has a school, that are both actively working towards our mission, then it should be representative like that on social media and on websites. So yes, last fall we embarked on a journey, and this isn't a paid ad for Backflip. I genuinely want to talk about it. We embarked on a journey with Backflip to take both of those websites and combine them into one, to have one website, which maybe some people who are listening like, well, duh, that makes sense. But that's where we were, and that's what we're working towards now. A website that is a couple of things. First and foremost, a website that is beautiful. A website that attracts by beauty. A website that contains who we are and what we do. And then a website that explains how you can be a part of it. In a website that is actually, in the broad scheme of things, really simplistic. You know, 10 years ago, websites were like, get everything you possibly can on a website because people are going to devour it. And that's still true, I guess, maybe for some places, but this is the mentality I have. And I hope
it's not true for any places.
No, not anymore.
Was I mean, it 10 years ago? We thought it was. I mean, it's more of the demand, the client demand, essentially. Like, and if we think of like a school example, it's like, okay, well, our parents need this and our teachers need this and our staff need this and everything has to be on the top level and everything is of equal importance. The reality is, you know, and we can look at the stats, and that's the difference over the last 20 years is like, we can look and say, here's the top five things people are doing on the website.
Yeah.
And that's 95% of our traffic. So let's make these the five most important.
Yes.
And then those other things can be somewhere else. But we're not going to make a menu that has 30 items because everything is important. Because it's not.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's just it. And really, this is what I had in the background of my mind as we were talking through with the guidance of the staff at Backflip. I want the website to serve as simply, and I'm going to use the word simply, as a launching pad for the next level interaction. So you know, I think there's maybe a mindset there to like, oh yeah, put all of registration on the website, put all the content. How about let's try it, see how it works. Let's just put what's your name and number and email if you're interested. And then we receive that on our end. And then that creates an avenue for us to contact them, for us to have that first interaction. Now, if someone is not ready for that first interaction, will there be an option? Can they pursue it further without speaking to one of us? Sure. Is that website going to push and advocate for like, we want to know just a little bit about you, so that way when we make contact with you and invite you in a genuine way, because we know that's going to go a lot farther. So our website, we want to serve as a place of information, because that is important. School parents, parishioners do access the website for information. So there will be the information that they're looking for, the things that are important, the things that statistically they're visiting the website for. But then in a really catered way to someone that, hey, I just moved to the area. Hey, I drove by your church. Hey, I've heard about your church and I want to know more. Hey, I came to your fish fry and I drove by that church and I just like to see the inside of it. Maybe there's a picture on the website. Really creating that kind of initial intrigue of showing beauty. I mean, I think that people, you know, I could go on a whole other show about this, about people's captivation by beauty, especially this year. I mean, the amount of people that have just walked into the church that have never been, like, oh, we just needed to see the inside of it. And I think that's a number of reasons, but to showcase that on the website and then to make it a really easy opportunity for them just to put one foot forward. And then we will take the 10 steps that we're going to take to get to you. So that's kind of the goal with the website. And it's no small task. I mean, we had two very, what I would consider large content filled websites, and we've narrowed it down into one website. Like you said, the website, the idea of like be all things to all people, right? Which is a great thing. But also the website was really carefully designed in a really, really great exercise. We looked at like, okay, let's try to sum up our entire parish community into like four personalities, right? While we're all unique and special and different, really we share a lot of similar characteristics, and we kind of have similar, I would say, stages of life, which in a really nice way equates to ability and also what captivates that stage of life. What captivates me is going to be very different than what captivates an 85-year-old parishioner and what captivates a 40-year-old dad. You know, like, so let's take these four maybe common personalities. Let's cater things we do on this website to just those four, right? Like, okay, if I'm a 40-year-old dad, I'm coming to the website, what am I looking for? If I am a college grad coming to the website, what am I looking for? And to try as best as we can to showcase that on the website and make it accessible and user-friendly. Yeah. I mean, all those things are important.
Right.
I
want to jump in there real quick, if you don't mind. That's an important part of the process. Is to understand who the audience is and what they want and what they need, because I think we can get caught up in, well, I know, I, you know, even my own business, I've been doing this for 14 years. I know what people need. But the second you ask, you're going to find out some different things. And so when you can create those personas, you can create these thought processes outside of yourself that you put your ideas through, and then you see if they hold water, right? So I want this on the website. Well, why? Well, I think it's useful. Well, why? Okay. Does the elderly parishioner want it? Does the parent of school person, does a potential want it? You know, go to one of the personas. And if all four want it, you're like, oh, well, yeah, this is a good idea then. Right. If none of them wanted it, you can, you know, then reevaluate and say, okay, I think it's important. It looks like our personas, you know, our target audience wouldn't think it's that important. Do I put it on the website? Do I just relegate it to, a page like, here's the staff page. Go to website.com/staff and you can have your links there. We're not putting it on the homepage. It's not in the top menu because we understand, at least we have a greater understanding of the audience need through these personas, through, you know, filtered through those kind of looking glasses, and we can understand it better. So it's definitely a helpful process that we look at ourselves in the same way as we work with clients like that.
Yeah, which is a new process for me. And I it's neat because I've translated that into more of what I do, that exercise. Because a lot of times I get stuck in like, okay, this is what I prefer. This is what I like to look like. This is what I like things to see and sound like. which sometimes I would like to think is a good thing. I like to think I have good taste in things, but ultimately I might not be. And so that exercise has translated of like, okay, Shane, just because you like this, do the other three personas, are they going to like this? It's going to be easy for them in all things, you know? So it's been very, it kind of creates more of an objective view on something. So it's been very, very interesting. And I, you know, in all of it, I think my greatest, I would say, fear in this process is that I don't want it to lose. I didn't want the church website to look like a new modern coffee shop website. You know, like I think there's kind of a trend towards that. Like, let's make this sleek and modern. But there's a risk there because there's a really rich history, tradition, and beauty. And so I just feel like this year has been just a year of blending, of my jobs, mission, evangelization, marketing, church, school, the website. I mean, really, I feel really privileged to be able to be a part of it because it's a neat opportunity. I think it's, of course, providential in the time that we're in. And to be able to partner with a great place like Backflip, I mean, it really, it's coming together in a beautiful way. Jay Gregory just asked, what was one thing on your website that was the best received? What was the 12th love? Well, this is fascinating because we're actually not live on our new website yet. And maybe listeners who are watching, no worries at all. No. It's no secret. It's not completed yet. We're still in the thick of it, which is really fascinating.
Do you mind repeating that again? I think I had a little blip on my end.
Oh, no worries at all. Yes. What I was saying is Jake Gregory asked about what change worked well on your website, what was a total flub. And I said, this is actually fun because we're not live yet with our new website. And it's not a secret or anything that we're building the new website, but we haven't launched it. It's not live. It's still in the works. So I'm very curious. You know, this comes with it. Jay Gregory knows this. We all know this. There comes with it some adaptability, some flexibility. And even in the conversations of building the website, like, hey, if this doesn't work, if this gets too complicated, if they can't find it, we can go back to the drawing board. We can edit this. We can make this more accessible. So I'm very curious as well to see, and I work in a place where people feel comfortable and ready to share their thoughts and opinions on, hey, we didn't like this. This works well. This doesn't work well, which sometimes it's a good thing.
That's a very polite way of putting it. We have very opinionated people.
Right. I share their opinions. So I think I share them with other people, so it makes them feel comfortable. But I'm sure we'll learn fast. I hope there's no flubs, but how we can make things better. So we're hoping maybe for a completion date this spring and then a launch date maybe this summer. Before next school year. So,
well, yeah, and honestly, you know, we've been doing websites for maybe about 7 years now. Okay. And I did websites at a previous career before this company. Okay. And when you really do this type of deep analysis and thought process, I don't know that I've ever come across like a major problem or flub in that sense. Certainly technology can be really difficult these days because there's, you know, 20 devices that are primary to what people use. And then on those 20 devices, there's another 5. So you got like 100 variations of devices and things. And sometimes what'll happen is like, oh, the video doesn't work on the new Surface from Microsoft. Sure. So like we have to go get a Surface and like figure out how to fix it.
Yeah.
But in terms of the content and things like that, we've never run into anything major. Like, I'm trying to think, there was a brand. What did they do? I'm trying to think of a brand that maybe it was a school that rebranded and everyone hated it. And they immediately went back like after 2 weeks. They're like, sorry, I spent all this money on the brand work and everyone hates it. So we went back. I don't think I've ever experienced anything like that at our company or other companies. But there's going to be those small things that need to be tweaked and fixed and updated. So that's how I would kind of answer that question.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. Just minor improvements.
Yeah. Well, and something you said earlier too, I think you said like test, you know, like get it out there and just see how it works, test it. Mm-hmm. That's really important. This idea. And everyone's heard it, you know, I'm kind of getting sick of hearing it and saying it, but like failing fast, like not to be afraid to do something new and get something out there. And, you know, hopefully most of what you do, everyone's like, oh, this is great. But I think some of it needs to have pushback. Like, you do need opinionated people to be like, this isn't working for me, or I don't like that. Because without that, you know, you're kind of off on your own doing whatever you want, and you get essentially like what we have in a lot of Catholic marketing,
right?
Which is just kind of unfettered mediocrity.
Right. Unfettered mediocrity. And I think a lot of it, maybe this is a personal reflection, stems from our own pride. You know, we don't, if we have an idea in our head of how we want something to go or look or experience, and it's not going that way, it's sometimes hard for me to look back, like that brand example you gave. I would just probably try to live in a world where I'm like, no, it is good, even though everyone's complaining about it. Don't go back. Because there's a pride there of like, no, I worked hard on this. I thought it was going to be great. And it didn't roll out the way I wanted it to. And to go back to the drawing board, I think, yes, James Berger, ask a seventh grader. They'll be brutal in feedback. Absolutely. I think I've like replaced my wardrobe after I taught middle school. I thought I looked good. And then,
oh my gosh.
So, you want brutal feedback. And that's, I know Carolyn just asked a question there. What is something Shane would recommend, or something he has learned as the person who has helped guide the process, asking for a friend that friend is me? It's a combination of those things. I think, I mean, I feel odd giving Carolyn advice, because I think she is a person that gives me a lot of advice, lots of advice, which I'm appreciative. I just learned a lot from her example. But I think those two things, I constantly have to get out of my own prideful mindset that I have opinions. My opinions maybe aren't always necessarily the best or right. And to have people in my court, if you will, that have an honest analysis of things that are going, you know, like, hey, this isn't working. It's sometimes hard to find honest people, or people that aren't afraid, there has to be trust there, is what I'm trying to say. To find people that you trust, that trust you, that will give honest feedback, that will give honest advice, that will give honest critiques, you name it, whether that be a seventh grader or a coworker or someone who's completely removed. You know, like, if I give this website to a friend who has no connection to us, to even the church, and say, hey, what are your thoughts on this? I'm probably gonna get a lot more honest feedback than someone that is a big fan, you know, like, or someone who's been committed for years, or someone who has little experience with a website. So, I think those are the two things: being humble enough to know when maybe you're on the wrong track, and to have people around you that are helping you get on the right track.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think that's just a great lesson in life, right? Yeah. To listen to others around you and be okay to be okay with diverse opinion, because it's tough, you know, as the Master Chief or whatever your title is. And
Master Chief. Yeah.
You know, Carolyn's got a similar kind of director of advancement or type of title. When you're kind of the leader and you're tasked and your butt's on the line for everything, it can be easy to say, well, I have to figure it out, and I have to trust my gut, and I have to do it by myself.
Right.
But I think a lot of strength and a lot of good things can come from maybe not always being like, oh, other people's ideas are better, but being open to it.
Right.
And being open to your idea not being great.
Yeah.
I have a high hourly fee when I'm working on creative. And so there's a pressure to be like, this has to be the best thing ever. But because of that, I've put myself, you know, John and I have really worked hard to put ourselves out there and be open to feedback, to open to criticism, open to changing our idea completely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at some point you then, you know, you take all that in, and hopefully you can create something that you can then push forward and be like, no, we've worked together. I've listened to this other thing. I agree. I'm taking that. I disagree. I'm taking this. And we just got to go. We just got to try it.
Exactly.
And once we get it out there, we'll know a lot more.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. That's exactly it. Which, is an adventure, which I love. Best I ever saw was the chief grown up. And we saw what we're like,
Yeah. I want to throw out there too, you know, just, I don't know, doing good things and helping others, like, not even from a kind of a fiscal mindset, but just from like, a desire to make better. And, you know, last night Carolyn showed us some work from the Holy See for the United Nations. It's like this event, and
wow,
she just candidly shared it, and I was like, oh my gosh, can we pitch something? Like, I would love to just really help this be awesome, you know. And it, you know, somebody who has graphic design skills, who worked really hard and did a pretty good job. And then it kind of, you know, it turned out like a dove smoking a rainbow joint. Like, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
That was multiple people's reaction when they saw it. And I, you know, I'm like, oh, I think I can see where they're getting at.
Yeah.
If I could give this to Hannah, like she could maybe do something, and like, I don't know if anything's going to come of it, but like maybe they could just have a little bit better art.
Yeah.
I threw it out there. I don't think anybody who watches this is going to be connected with that. Yeah. And so I hope I'm not offending.
Yeah, right,
I'm
not right.
Intend, but we just really want to raise that,
elevate
right. that, because it's important work, right? You know, right. why do we gild our churches? Why don't we just have shanty churches? Right. Well, it's because we're trying visually to do what Christ does in person, that discipleship, what people do in evangelization. You know, we're trying to do that visually. When somebody sees like the new St. Paul's, or they walk into IHM, their eyes are raised, you know, to the, in IHM, the great, what's that called?
Mosaic.
The mosaic.
Yeah.
You know, your eyes are raised to that. And like in the morning when the sun shines through, like, it's so gorgeous. And people are like, well, why don't you just save money and donate that to charity? It's like, well, you know, the fruit that's coming from somebody experiencing this, in our estimation, is greater. We'll also donate to charity. We're also donating a lot to charity.
Right.
However, you know, we need to gild and we need to make beautiful these things to get them in the door so they can meet somebody.
Yeah. The great importance of, putting time and worth and money into things that are beautiful and true and worthy and good is a conversation I always love having. And the ability to translate that into like this kind of new age website, I guess, like a website in the new age is what I should say, has been, which is so great working with, especially Hannah and Emily, because they get it, they understand it, that this isn't just like a marketing tool, that this is like introducing something of so high worth. And that's why like, we want to present that, like Carolyn just said in her comment, like we want to present this as like, this is high level, this is important. This isn't just like a cute thing or a fun thing that you can be involved in for a little bit. Like this is life changing and it's beautiful and we want that. And I will say it over and over again, it's just so much easier when I myself am drawn to that, because it's easy to draw others to that.
Right. Well, and those of us who, you know, become successful in this, learn those skills, gain that eye. So,
right.
You know, the creative that I do for companies is going to be slanted in a certain direction, even though I try to adapt to every group. And certainly the same way with you or Carolyn or any marketer,
right.
It's going to have that. But when we're successful and when we can be at this job in longer than 6 months, we can really hone that and develop it in a way that it's successful.
You right. know? Absolutely. Yeah. I'm about to butcher this. So again, please don't hold this any worth. I cannot even remember the name of the company. Patek Philippe. It's a watch company. I don't know if anybody's watching right now that's familiar with like beautiful watches. Oh, I can't remember what it is. They're like rare, very expensive watches. And I'm going to look up their ad right now, because it's like, it's essentially along the lines of like, you never really own this watch. You are simply just like safeguarding this watch to hand to the next person.
Oh, wow.
Patek
Philippe?
Correct. Yeah, there it is. And they had a marketing campaign not too long ago that was essentially along those lines. Like, this is not, you don't ever own a Patek Philippe watch. You are just like watching it. You're just holding it until you pass to the next person. And that's kind of how I view what I do here. It's like, I am safeguarding this, I'm promoting it, I'm passing it on, which I guess is what we all do and when we're part of this, that we are here to protect it, we are here to promote it, we're here to pass it on. And does that change how we pass it on? One could say yes, one could say no. Does it change how we need to protect it? Of course, the culture and surrounding forces cause us to need to protect in different ways, but the gift of being able to promote it is a gift that I'm tapping into now in a really unique way. And I simply, when I get in my own head or prideful about the things we do here, even on a staff, even with the diverse thoughts and comments and personalities of everyone that we work with, I sometimes just think like, okay, Shane, this, you don't own this. You're just like doing your best to promote it and pass it on and protect it in the process. Whether that be at an event or planning an event or building a website or promoting a fish fry, all these things that, I'm just a part of a bigger picture and I'm proud to be part of it. So that's the mindset that I take into marketing and more, but, I've learned a lot in the process.
I love that, and I'm going to steal that for some marketing. You're not buying a watch for yourself or product, you know, it's for the future, or like, you know, obviously it makes a lot of sense with the church in that regard as well. Like Jesus has already died for us for our sins. He's already bared those iniquities, you know, in that sense, the battle is won. However, there's a part that we can play. And so understanding that, okay, battle's won, but I have to work hard right now to do my part.
Right, exactly. And I like what Andrew said, like good design, architecture, those things. I mean, if like this Patek watch, like that watch will always be considered valuable and beautiful. And because that watch was made long before that person has it and long before after they give it away. In a similar way with, I know I'm comparing a very ethereal, very eternal thing to a watch, but the church is the same way. And the way we market the church is the same way. We are marketing something that's way beyond us and building something that is way beyond us. And that's where the beauty comes in. J. Gregory does a good point. It's our ministry, right? Like that, we are called to be active and proactive in our ministry. But yes, ultimately, there's great comfort in knowing I'm not the only chief.
Right. Well, and you know, we're kind of in the middle of some great stuff, but we're at time.
Yeah.
So I did want us to play Two Truths and a Lie, so we can get to know you a little bit better.
Sure.
And I don't know. Let's see. I can go first because I always write my stuff down in advance because I know it's coming.
Yeah.
I can give you kind of a moment to finish thinking. I did give you the heads up before.
Yeah, which is helpful. Yeah.
You can kind of see how it goes. So if you are watching at home, and it's nice. John and I have played 50 times, 60 times, 70 times. So I guess that doesn't sound like that much, but like, what's that? No. Like completely different ones every time. Wow. So we have to tell three stories. So I guess that's fine. We've told like 200 stories that, you know, we don't think the other person has heard or they've heard a variation of. So it's nice because he's not on to guess. So just you and the folks at home. So I'll go first.
Cool.
And then we'll see your guesses and the folks at home, and then you'll go after. So here we go. Let me pull up my notes. Okay. So, this is Two Truths and a Lie. My dad, was born in South Dakota. I was just in Tortola last week on vacation. You can tell actually from my shirt here. and I was born in Virginia. So number one, my dad is from South Dakota. Number two, I was just in Tortola, and this is my shirt. Dun, 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 the conch shack. That's probably Cervasus right here.
Okay. You know,
and then the third was being born in Virginia.
Can I guess now, or should I wait a little bit? Or should I share mine? Well,
yeah, let's see. Anybody at home want to guess?
How about I'll share mine, and whoever's watching can chime in on both of them, give them some time to think.
There we go. I like it. Let's do it.
All right. I was born colorblind, as are both my brothers. I have two brothers. We're all colorblind.
Were you then able to see color afterwards?
No, great distinction. I'm still colorblind, unfortunately. Okay. I'm still waiting for that. Grow out of it, right? Why can't that be something out of it?
When you said you were born colorblind, I assumed you overcame it through training.
Do people ever like become colorblind? No, I think you're always born colorblind, right? I was trying to make it more of a story. It was just a fact.
Yeah, sure.
I could be a lie. I am featured in a marketing campaign in China. And my last fact is I was once at a trampoline park and I broke my leg in the foam pit. Great. Well, I kind of cheated because now I'm reading other people's answers. but I agree with Carolyn. I don't think you were in Tortola last week because you were in Turks and Caicos. But then I started thinking, I'm like, are they close? Is that the same? I'm not very good geography wise. But I don't know, because I'll go with my instinctual guess. I don't think your dad's from South Dakota. That was going to be my actual guess.
Okay, I appreciate your honesty.
Thank you.
I went there because you said you're from North Dakota.
I am.
And my father is from South Dakota. And my mom's from Sioux City, Iowa. Yeah. And they met in South Dakota. And actually, John's parents, grandparents, actually, and I think both of his parents were born in Yankton, South Dakota.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So, same town as my grandparents.
No way.
It's nuts. Yeah.
Okay. And most likely a small town. So even decreased odds there. Increased odds, whatever. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Very good.
All right. And then the other one. So James said, I wasn't born in Virginia. I was born in Virginia. My dad was in the military. So Virginia, Rhode Island. And then we lived in Iowa for like 6 months while my dad was overseas. And then Florida and then Kenosha. And I've actually been here for 18 years. So the longest I've ever been anywhere. Yeah. Yeah. John always makes fun of me because people are like, where are you from? And I'm like,
what parts?
I've lived here for almost 20 years, the longest anywhere. Otherwise, Virginia, Rhode Island, Florida. Wow.
You were Turks and Caicos, of course. Wow. You've been like very carefully showed that part of the shirt.
Yeah. The natives will say Turks and Caicos.
Turks and Caicos. Okay.
Yep. Like the Haitian natives.
Yeah.
All right. Wow. So now Shane's up. So we got born. So
yes.
Honesty, you were wrong. Using your resources, you were right. So
correct. Yes.
Kids at home, always use the resources at hand.
Okay, very good. Okay, I'm liking these guesses that are coming in.
So we got one born colorblind and still colorblind.
Still
that's
colorblind.
A thing.
Yeah.
Two, featured in a marketing campaign in China. Three, once at a trampoline park and broke your leg in a
foam pit.
What the heck is a foam pit?
You know, like have you been to a trampoline park? You like jump off a trampoline into a big foam pit.
Oh,
like
squares. Yeah, they'll have like big squares foams. Yeah, for a second there, I was like, was this some kind of party
thing? Oh, like a
foam party. Okay, so we do got some answers. So
yeah, I want to hear your guess, Ryan.
Let's see. Yeah, I'm going to. Okay. I won't look at theirs because somebody might know.
Right.
Born colorblind, featured in a marketing campaign, once a trampoline park, broke your leg in a foam pit. I would like to think that you were featured in a marketing campaign in China.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That sounds awesome. That sounds like a thing that I want to be true.
Okay.
Once at a trampoline park, broke your leg in a foam pit, or you were born colorblind. I'm trying to think of if we've done work together and you've picked colors.
Ooh, that would be indicative.
You're like, I like this shade of gray more than I like that shade of gray.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
Follow-up question. Can you see any of the shapes in the color blot test?
Oh, that's going to give away the answer. Can I see any of the shapes? Depends on what kind of colorblind test I'm taking. You know?
All right.
Maybe there's four colorblind people, if that helps with anything.
Let's see. It's tough because you dress smartly.
Thank you.
So I feel like, I said that the other day.
You are good at dressing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, clever, you know.
Dress. Yeah.
Looks smart. So I feel like you've got to see color. Otherwise, you have somebody helping you with the color. So I'm going to say the trampoline park foam. You didn't break your leg there, but let's go over here to the, question. Yeah. So, Max Rettler said I was trying to oversell this whole t-shirt thing. So they would say your Tortola trip is a lie. I did go to Tortola in 2016.
Okay.
My wife and I have been away from our children twice.
And I was
in 12 years, and one was Tortola, one was Turks and Caicos.
I love it. Go big, you know?
All right. Yeah. Carolyn says Shanes are awesome. James Gregory says you're not colorblind. So that's another colorblind. Max Rettler says third. So that's a broken leg. Let's see. Shanes are hard. I really want to hope that he's in a marketing campaign. Yeah, me too, Carolyn. That'd be so amazing. And if he is, he's going to share it and we're going to post it. So she also thinks the third. Yeah, I think Shane's third one is a lie. You know, I bet you like broke your leg just on the trampoline or like,
yeah, you know, no.
Even though that'd be funny.
The third one is a lie. I did not break my leg at a trampoline park, which, yes, does in fact mean I am born and I'm still colorblind. And I was, oddly enough, in a marketing campaign in China for a cheese company.
That's amazing. Do you have it? Can we see it?
I'll send it to you. Can I send it to you?
Yeah, yeah. That'll be fine.
I don't think I can find it super quick, but I'll just do a quick. If I can't find it in 20 seconds.
See, my follow-up question with the blind thing, I think you gave me the answer that gave me confidence. You're like, well, it depends on the kind. Cause I feel like only people who have some kind of colorblindness would know. Cause like I have a red green deficiency, which apparently is like 20% of men have this thing. And, basically at a quick glance, shades of those colors blend together for me. But if I'm told, yeah, this is different, I can be like, okay, this one's a little bit lighter, you know.
Yeah.
It might take a little bit longer to see.
I'm red-green colorblind, but you just referred to it as a red-green deficiency.
Yeah, so I'm deficient. So I can still see red and green and, you know, I see all the colors. But like one time I was doing a graphic for somebody. I don't do graphics anymore, so don't worry. And I had done it over a week and I was showing somebody for a proof. I was showing John and he's like, did you mean to have purple and blue right next to each other?
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, there's purple here. And I was like, oh damn. Like I couldn't tell, you know? And when he pointed it out, I could see, I was like, okay, I can tell that's a little different. I think for other people, they can tell it's very different.
Yes.
But
yeah.
You know, with it being pointed out, I could see it. So
right. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so I appreciate the compliments. I, for a long time, well, growing up, I wore a school uniform, so it was very easy to not make any type of fashion.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And then when I got to college, I stuck to a lot of gray and black, and I had a couple of honest friends that were like, oh, me and I want to try that again.
So I love that. That's amazing.
No one's worked to me in a long time. So either people are just being really kind or I've gotten better. I know some people that like have labeled their closets like this is shirt number one and can be paired with pants 4, 5, and 6. I mean, like,
they, oh,
like,
yeah,
because it sometimes,
absolutely.
Yes. And a quick note on the trampoline park. That is a true story. It just happened to a good friend of mine and I was there. He jumped off the trampoline into the ball pit and then was like yelling in pain. And I thought he was joking. So I'm kind of the terror of the story. He's like, yeah, he's fine. And then they, had to pull him
and
out.
And he's not fine. Yeah. Fine. I was also, you kind of mentioned you're not like a outdoorsy camper, you know, type of person. And, and you said like bow and arrow. So I was like, maybe not super athletic. So I was kind of like, if given a chance at a trampoline park, you'd try it out, but you're probably
I'm not going to be the first one out there.
Right. Yeah. You're not the first one out there and you're not the last one out there. So
exactly.
Yeah. That was good. Those were good.
Thank you. Yes. And I unfortunately, I can't look at pictures while I'm talking, so unfortunately I didn't find it. I will share it. I'll put it in these maybe comments. Yes, a friend's company is a cheese company, and they were launching a campaign in China for their cheese company, essentially to make more of like cheese more casual as it is in America. And so it's just like, at my understanding, it's in a magazine, a brochure, and on a billboard. And it's just me at a cheese party showing like, look, we have cheese casually. So I like to tell people I'm a paid model, a paid international model, because it's
true. Oh my gosh, yeah.
I wanted to get a few more details. So to my knowledge, it didn't move beyond China, but who knows?
But starting today, it will.
Starting today, will. It'll be
That's amazing. All right. I hate to break it up, but I do like to respect people's time. It's 1:30. What can we plug for you? What do you want to share?
Hey, that's good. Thank you for asking. We have another fish fry coming up the end of March, Memorial Day weekend on Friday. Our school is thriving. We are open and running, and enrollment is open for next year. We're age 3 all the way to 8th grade school. I would say we have a pretty phenomenal school. We actually just started this year having a special needs program. So now we have a full accessibility and ready to go for any type of learning capabilities, you name it, which is a great feature to have in a Catholic school, and pretty rare. We're the only Catholic school in the diocese that has that. So school enrollment is open. And of course, if you are ever interested and want to check out the church, the parish, the school, you want to come hang out, have a cup of coffee, you name it. Our new website is coming soon. Right now you're seeing the current website. Check it out. It's still a beautiful website. Don't get me wrong. Would love to meet you. If you have any questions, we're always open. I love talking to new people. So yeah, I guess those would be the plugs. But Ryan, seriously, this has been great. Thank you for having me on here. Thank you for everyone listening to me ramble on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll get you scheduled for part two so we can actually get into the meat of the conversation. And you had said, I think you said end of March. Do you mean end of May?
I do mean end of May. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I got so excited hearing end of March. Like, obviously that wouldn't work out because next week it's beginning of April.
Yeah, we got Holy Week Easter coming up.
We missed last Friday because...
It's our biggest one yet, Ryan. Yeah, your tortilla trick.
Yeah, tortilla chips. No, that we're so excited. Everyone should absolutely check out fish fry in May, and the school and the parish.
Yeah, good things.
Father Chad also said something. I think like the first week he was there was essentially like, when I leave, you know, because priests get moved around. When I leave, if you aren't a little bit holier than when I came, I haven't done my job, and that's always stuck with me. And it's kind of talking, you know, like you said about the mission. So we love IHM. We love you and all the staff and the teachers, and appreciate that we've actually been able to have our kids in school. So thank you guys for all your hard work. It's been amazing.
Hey, thank you, Ryan. Sincerely, thank you all for watching.
Cool. So thank you for watching. Thank you for commenting too. This was fantastic. We do this every Friday for those who aren't here. We talk to lots of different types of people, always people that we think would be interesting to talk to. Wow. Sometimes we know them, other times we don't, but it's always a blast. We're always drinking. I'm usually drinking tequila. There's usually at least coffee, water, sparkling. So please bring whatever you like to the party and hang out with us every Friday at noon. Next week, we don't have somebody yet, but we'll have somebody. I just got some new ideas from our conversation here. And then the following couple of weeks, we actually have some part twos. So in 2 weeks, we'll have Michael Graff, round two. He's a writer and director from the area who has several scripts in various stages of optioning and becoming movies. He's a great local talent who just has a breadth of experience, who's been fantastic to talk to. After that, we have Sarah Cohan, who we've worked with for several years, but she's a mover and shaker in Chicago. She runs two businesses. One is business coaching for women, and the other is educational tutoring. So tutoring for high school, college, college admission, as well as musical. So she's a baller. She's just doing such cool stuff. And then I got an email that we have a Sarah Noonan in a couple weeks after that. So we have a lot of great content coming. Should be as fun as this. Hopefully it can be as fun as this. We'll get you back on again, Shane, because like I said, I appreciate you hanging out with me for an hour and a half, and I appreciate everyone for being on. We could probably go for several hours, but we got stuff to do, so we'll have you back on. Yeah, thanks again. Let's see if I have this graphic right. We'll just throw up the non-thanks graphic. How's that sound?
There you go.
Thanks, everybody.
Hey, thank you. Take it easy.
Bye.